We're learning about the 70 people of Yaakov's family that went down to Mitzrayim. So he starts discussing the children and grandchildren of Yaakov. So he mentioned Reuven's kids, Shimon's kids, Levi's kids, Yehuda's kids. Now, yeah, but it's not good. So he says, Ubnei Yisachar, I'm sorry, Pasuk Yud Gimel. The children of Yisachar were Tela, Ufuva, V'yei, V'shimrin. These are the Hebrew names of Yisachar's children. Now the Mefarshim explain that later on in Chumash, this person Yev is really called Yashuv, with an additional shin in it. Here it's called Yev, and then they became Yashuv. So he says why? So the Mefarshim explain, because Yashuv means returning, that he returned the Jews back to Hashem. So therefore, because he was devoted his life to Torah study, because Yisachar, generally speaking, was the tribe that dealt designated for learning. They couldn't have Yisachar and Zvulun. Yisachar sat and learned, and Zvulun worked and supported Yisachar. That was the partnership, the first partnership of Torah and business that existed. So Yoiv, because he started learning Torah a whole day and brought people back to Yiddishkeit, so they added the shin to make a Yeshov in the way that he was returning Jews to Hashem. Another interpretation was that Yoiv, Yisachar realized later that Yev is not such a good name. So what he did was, he donated one of the shin from his name. Now Yisachar is spelled Yud Shin Shin Chaf Resh. So really it should be pronounced Yisachar. But we don't pronounce it Yisachar, we pronounce it Yisachar, the second shin is silent. So one view in the Medrash says that Yisachar gave away his shin to Yashuv, that he should be called Yashuv in the extra shin, and therefore Yisachar's name is silenced. We don't say Yisachar, we read it Yisachar.
That's why when from Sarai, Zehei was taking it, as if it didn't remain in Sarai name, and here it remained.
Because it wasn't a change by Hashem, he did it. Okay, so then it says, Ubnei Zvulun, who were the children of Zvulun? Sered, Elin, V'Yachleel. And as the Mefarshim explained, they were all merchants. They made a lot of money. And they supported the Yisachar's kids. Because Yisachar, like we said, learned Torah, and Zvulun did business. Then it says, Ela B'nei Leah. So now the Torah is subtotaling all the children. These are the children of Leah, Asher Yoldo L'Yakiv B'Padan Aram, that gave birth to Yaakov in Padan Aram. Eis Dina Bite and Dina his daughter. Now we find an interesting thing. The Pasuk says these are the sons of Leah and Dina his daughter. So the boys he puts on Leah's name and Dina the girl he puts on Yaakov's name. So the question, why do you put the girls on Yaakov's name and the boys on Leah's name? So Rashi says this is what the Gemara says, and it's questionable scientifically what it means, but the Torah says this in a few places, that Ishma's Ras Tchila, when the man gives the seed first, you give birth to a girl. When the woman gives the seed first, you give birth to a boy. So therefore Rashi says that Leah is her, she created, so to speak, the boys, and Yaakov created Dina. It's questionable again exactly what it means, but this is basically what the Torah says.
Is that true, though?
Again, the Torah says it is true. The question, what it means, is questionable. The Torah says it is true. The question is, what does the Torah mean by it? Then the Mefarshim of Chumash elaborates scientifically exactly what it means. He brings down over here is also, in contemporary medical terms, it's unclear exactly what the Torah means by it.
I have a quick question.
Yeah. Mentioned about.
Right. Over here, half the page is named, and it doesn't go into detail of who these people are. It's not important to go into detail. Why is it important to even know the name?
We're going to see. When we get to the sum total of 70, it's important to understand why the Torah is enumerating all the names. So you have to wait a few more psukim. Now, another interpretation, why it says also, Dina Bitei, Dina his daughter. Why is the Torah emphasizing Dina? as his daughter, because the Mefarshim say when Dina became defiled by Shechem, Yaakov didn't disown her, Yaakov didn't throw her away. Basically, he still considered her his daughter, even though she was defiled by Shechem. So the Torah is telling us that Dina Bite, that even after everything is said and done, Dina was still his daughter. Okay, then there's Kol Nefesh, Elim Bnei Leah, okay, Kol Nefesh Banav Bnei Sav, all the souls of his sons and daughters were Shleishim V'Shalish, 33.
Sorry, Rabbi, by sending her to Egypt all by herself.
No, that was Osnas.
No,
Dina stayed home.
Sorry,
later on.
Okay.
Dina's daughter sent away, but Dina herself stayed. Now, the pasuk concludes, how many children were of Leah? So it says 33. Now, Rashi comments, if you count how many kids the Torah just mentioned, it's 32. And yet the Torah is counting 33. So how do you get 33 if there's only 32? So Rashi answers, and there's a lot of discussion on this Rashi. Rashi says that the 33rd one was Yocheved, who was Levi's daughter, who was born when they walked into Egypt in the walls. In the wall of the city, when they were coming into Egypt, so Yocheved was born. So even though the Torah doesn't enumerate her, because she wasn't born yet, but the Torah is saying the sum total of Leah's kids was 33 by the time they entered into Egypt. Now, based on this, the Mefarshim have a lot of problems. Okay? Because if you count Yocheved being born entering Egypt, Yocheved was at that time 130 years old when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. If Yocheved was born when the Jews entered Egypt, then she gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu at 130 years old. Why? It's very simple math. The Jews were in Egypt 210 years. From the time Yaakov Avinu came down to Egypt until they left, we know it was 210 years. Moshe Rabbeinu, says in the Chumash, was 80 years old when they left. Now, if his mother was born as soon as they came into Egypt, that means when they left, she was 210 years old. And Moshe Rabbeinu was 80, so she was 130 at the time Moshe Rabbeinu was born. So the Mefarshim ask, if that's the case, how in the world the Torah makes such a big commotion about Sarah? That Sarah gave birth at 90 years old to Yitzchak, and the Torah makes a big miracle without commotion and the whole story, and here Yocheved gave birth at 130, nobody talks about it. Even though it wasn't really 130, because Miriam, Moshe's sister, was 5 years older than she was, the Moshe was. So Yocheved was 125 when she gave birth to Miriam. But still, if the Torah makes such a commotion about 90, why isn't the Torah making such a commotion? The miracle of Yocheved that she gave birth to her first child at 125. So the Mefarshim answered, and this we'll soon see, there's a lot of different opinions with the arguments about this whole issue. But one point of interest is, it wasn't only the age by Sarah that she gave birth to 90. Sarah, as the pasuk says, is her menstrual cycle stopped. Secondly, Rashi comments that Avram and Sarah didn't even have the uterus to be able to give birth to a baby. When it says Sarah was akara ein lo velad, Rashi says all the way in the end of Noach that she didn't even have the ability to give birth to a baby. So it wasn't only Sarah's age which was the miracle; the fact that a woman who medically cannot have a baby had a baby. The fact that Yocheved had a baby at 130, at those days, it wasn't such a big, uncommon thing. That by Sarah, it was a bigger miracle. But the Ibn Ezra, Taka disagrees with Rashi because of it, and he says, according to Rashi, and the Medrash, by the way, that says Yocheved was born when they were coming into Egypt, he says, if that's the case, then why doesn't the Torah make a big miracle about it, and so on and so forth. So therefore, some people say that it's not counted. It's not counted as Yocheved was not counted. She was born much later, according to Ibn Ezra. She wasn't born when they came into Egypt. She was born much later, and therefore she wasn't 130 when she gave birth to Moshe. She was 30s or 40, whatever. So how do you get the Cheshbon 33 if it's only 32? They say Yaakov is counted. Yaakov was counted and Leah's kids together to make it 33. That's how he learns. Other people, the Ramban argues on Ibn Ezra, who says you can't have such a concept. It says that Medrash says that she was 130, you know, and when she was born in the walls. So therefore he says it wasn't so uncommon that that should happen in those days. Okay.
33 were the children of her children.
Well, really, if you count, it's only 32.
Right.
Children and grandchildren. Okay. We're counting the amount of people that went into Egypt. Because as Rashi will explain later, and we'll get there in a few psukim, there's two opinions, who the Shvatim married. Who did the 12 tribes marry? So there's two opinions that Rashi quotes earlier and later in Chumash. One opinion says they married the girls from Canaan, whoever they married. Another opinion says twins were born with each brother, each Shevet. Reuven had a twin, Shimon had a twin, Levi had a twin, Yehuda had a twin, each brother had a twin. Binyamin was a triplet. Binyamin had two Swiss sisters born with them. And each one married the other one's twin. Okay? So based on that, the question is, Rashi is going to ask later, so why aren't they counted? They're also Yaakov's kids. So Rashi says, according to that opinion, they all died. It's one opinion. They all died. Other commentaries say, what do you mean they all died? Everybody died. So they say no, because later on the Pasuk says, excluding the children's wives. So they were primarily the wives, not so much the daughters, because they weren't as great, so they were the wives, not the daughters, so the Torah doesn't count them. But Rashi says, according to the opinion that says that there were twins born with each brother, you know, they all died on the way. They all died, I'm sorry, before they went into Egypt.
But actually, 70 people went to Egypt.
70 Jews went into Egypt. And there's a reason, what's the number 70?
Everybody was young.
Yeah. Yosef was the second youngest, right? Yosef, when Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, was 39. And he was the second youngest. Binyamin was a little bit younger. So if Reuven, how old was Reuven already? They weren't that much older than him.
It's 7 years of difference.
What?
Between 14. Them, 7 years.
14, really.
14.
Yeah.
The wives weren't Jewish?
Huh?
The wives weren't Jewish?
What do you call Jewish at that time?
They weren't counted in the folding.
Was Rivka Jewish?
Yeah.
How would have made her Jewish? She was Lavan's sister. What made her so holy?
Some other than
Jews. Lavan wasn't Jewish. Mrs. Lavan wasn't Jewish. So Rachel and Leah were also Jews. We learned before Matan Torah, the definition of Jew meant believing in the way of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, meaning believing in one God and believing in the concept. But there was no Jew at that time. Even Yosef's wife, Asnas, that he married in Egypt, well, some Mefarshim say it was Dinah's daughter, then for sure she was Jewish. But even not, the Mefarshim say, Asnas, when she married Yosef, became a religious, you know, a religious person, like Yosef's beliefs. So whoever they married accepted their beliefs, obviously. You're talking before the Torah. It's even questionable if the Shvatim themselves kept the Torah or not. It's questionable if they kept the Torah. And some commentaries connect it to this particular argument, who did the brothers marry? If they married non-Jewish women, that means they didn't keep the Torah. If they married their sisters, their half-sisters, in other words, they didn't marry their own twin, they married somebody else's twin from a different mother, so then they did keep Torah.
But how would they marry Canaan if it said not to marry Canaan?
No. It doesn't say, Avram told Yitzchak, I don't want you to, Avram told Eliezer, I don't want my son. But he was the Ovis. The Ovis were holier, and they couldn't marry people from Canaan. The brothers, whoever they married. There weren't any Jewish girls running around. Yeah?
But
huh? They were all tzaddikim, but before Matan Torah, there was nothing wrong with marrying a woman.
It was other people, except Canaan.
So maybe they married other people. Doesn't say who they married. Rashi says Canaan saw you, but
this is what I'm asking. How it's Avraham Yitzchak said for sure.
Some Mefarshim learned that the word Canaan over there means business people. Like Rashi says by Yehuda and Tamar, Basish Kanani was a daughter of a businessman. Whatever. They definitely knew because Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov kept kosher. Did the tribes keep kosher? It's questionable in the Medrash. There's two opinions. Did the Jews in Egypt keep kosher? Is again questionable. But they, according to most opinions, they didn't have a din of Jews. They had a din of Bnei Noach, like the regular people. Except they kept certain observances that they kept. But the laws weren't given yet.
Rabbi, in the beginning it says that Shem had a yeshiva. What were they studying in there? They didn't have the Torah.
You know, I'll tell you a little secret. I really don't know. Because, I'll tell you what, I have a problem with this. If they studied Chitas, if they studied Chumash, and Yaakov was in yeshiva for 14 years, right? And he studied Chumash, wouldn't Yaakov know the story of Yosef being sold?
Maybe it was,
I mean, come on, what's he crying about? He knows this is part of the fairy tale, you know? This is the story.
It was written the other way, that it was not readable.
So the question is, what?
There
was no Torah basically after that time. So obviously, whatever it means, I don't know. I've never seen anywhere that it says, again, I'm not saying it doesn't say anywhere, I've never seen anywhere where it says, what exactly did they learn in the yeshiva Shem Ve'ever? If they learned Chumash, you know, then Yaakov should have known that Lavan was going to trick him.
But it's the same
question. You know what I mean? The whole...
Love is blind.
It's the same question about Moshe Kotev Bezema. The Moshe didn't know that it's written about him, is we're dying. It's the same question.
No, it's not the same question. It's the same question. Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said, write that you're dying. So he wrote that he's dying. But here, if he studied Torah, doesn't he know what Lovin did with the...
opinion that Yeshua changed the...
Yeshua, no. One opinion says Yeshua wrote it, but he didn't change anything. What?
But they could say the Torah they had up till that time.
That's what he said, but what Torah did they have?
They had from the generations from...
What Torah did they have? He learned 14 years in yeshiva day and night, it says. 14 years?
Why not?
Come on. How much can... It's all together. Sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach is 24 mitzvahs. If you break them down.
Yeah, but that's
14... Yaakov Avinu was a brilliant student.
Seven.
Yeah, but seven, the general ones, they branch off. They break out. But Yaakov Avinu was a brilliant student. Listen, Moshe Rabbeinu learned the whole Torah in 40 days. The whole book he learned in 40 days, yeah? Granted, he was a good teacher and a good student. But Yaakov at least was a good student. 14 years to learn seven mitzvahs? I mean, so obviously, they learned Chassidus, they learned Kabbalah, they learned... I don't know what they learned. Yeah, but they definitely didn't learn Chumash as we have it today, that Yosef was sold as a slave and his father was crying for 22 years. I mean,
no.
It's a little funny. No? I mean...
Well,
they learned Torah, but Torah was there. Avraham learned Torah, Yitzchak learned Torah, Yaakov learned Torah, Noach learned Torah. They all learned Torah. And if they learned Torah, there was a lot to do.
Adam has a book that everybody studies.
Sefer Yetzirah. One second, what did I press? No,
so that's very questionable.
They learned
Torah,
what Torah... Okay, let's get back here. Ufnei God, now he goes into the other children of God. Utsifi and Chagi, Shuni ve'edzbein, 80 Varei Divar Eli. These were all God's kids. Bnei Asher, who were the children of Asher, Yimna Yishva, Yishvi Bria, Veserech Achesim, and Serech the sister. And you know, sometimes it's with a sin, sometimes with the Samach, and Serech the sister, Ubnei Bria, and the children of Bria, and those Bria already got married and had kids, were Chever Umalkiel. Now Serech Bas Asher was a very special person. Now there are Mefarshim that want to say, but they refute it, that Sarah was not Asher's daughter, it was a daughter from a previous marriage. But the Mefarshim basically don't understand it at all, because here the Torah says clearly it's Yaakov's children, and Yaakov's grandchildren. If it's from a previous marriage, what does it have to do with Yaakov? Then it's not Yaakov's descendant. So therefore basically the Mefarshim learn that Sarah was Asher's biological daughter. Now, Sarah, as we learned before, played a special role because she was the one that informed Yaakov that Yosef was still alive, and she, as the Medrash says, she never died. She went alive into Gan Eden. Sarach never died. She'll get the bracha from Yaakov that she'll never die. Okay, so these are the kid Eli b'nei Zilpa. These are the servants of Zilpa. Asher nasan Lavan l'Leia b'ite that Lavan gave to Leah's daughter. And as the Mefarshim point out, that she wasn't a maid servant because Rachel freed her, and therefore she was a full-fledged wife of Yaakov. She wasn't only a maid servant. Now, the Mefarshim ask a question. First, it's mentioning Leah kids, and then Zilpah's kids. So it's mentioning Leah's kids and then Zilpah's kids. Why doesn't it mention Rachel first? Normally, it goes Rachel first. So it says the reason is because it goes by the amount of people that had amount of kids in their mounts. Leah had 33, Zilpah had 16. It goes down in descending order that the way it's mentioned. Now, we learned an interesting question a while back. We learned the question, remember, how did Yaakov marry Rachel and Leah? If there are two sisters, Yaakov kept Tati and allowed to marry two sisters. The question goes even more, because Bilha and Zilpah were also sisters. They were Rachel and Leah's sisters. But they were half-sisters, but they were all Lavan's kids. In other words, Lavan's primary wife gave birth to Rachel and Leah, and Lavan's concubine gave birth to Bilha and Zilpah, but they were still two sisters. So how did Yaakov marry two sisters? So Rachel and Leah we discussed in the past. How did he marry Bilha and Zilpah? So the answer is, because Bilha and Zilpah, the Torah says, were maidservants. And once they were maidservants, they lost their identity. Just like we discussed, last week was in the Shir, but 2 weeks ago we discussed, how did Shimon marry Dina? Yeah. The fact that she became Shechem's maidservant, she lost her individual identity, and therefore she didn't have a din of a sister. So same thing, Bilha and Zilpah didn't have the din of sisters in this case. Okay, then it says, Ela b'nei Zilpah shenosin lovin le'abita v'telis ela Yaakov, how many people? Sheish esrei nafish, 16. So the first one, Leah had 33, Zilpah had 16. Then it says, b'nei Rachel eishes Yaakov, the children of Rachel, who was the wife of Yaakov. Now obviously, they're all wives. Why does it say the wife? Because she was the primary wife, is clear. And even Leah's kids, Yehuda, admitted that Rachel was the primary wife. Now, it says, even though Rachel had much less kids than Leah, that was only in numbers. In quality, Yosef and Binyamin were greater than all the other kids. Why? Number one, Yosef was merited to have two tribes. So he had was the firstborn. And Binyamin, the Gemara says, was so great that the only reason Binyamin died was because God decreed death in the world because of the Chetei Tzadas. The Gemara says four tzaddikim died only because God said death will be in the world. But they were so great that on their own they had no sins whatsoever. What?
They were not great enough.
Not as great them as the children, as the person themselves. Their offshoots were great. But as far as the people themselves, Yosef is called Yosef a tzaddik, and Binyamin was so great that he only died because of the sin of the snake. So therefore, it's brought down that the quality-wise, they were much greater.
What is the reason that every time it's mentioned another order?
What another order?
The Shvatim.
They said why here is mentioning the order, the numbers.
There is numbers. In other places it mentions other orders. Sometimes,
it depends what there's reasons always why it mentions different orders. Depends why. Here, we're learning here. Here is because of the numbers. In fact, it's interesting. Vilnagar points out that the maidservant had exactly half of what the primary wife had. Leah had 32. Okay, 33 was later, but 32. So Zilpah had 16. Half of what Leah had. Rachel will soon see 14, and Bilhah had 7. So it's interesting, and Vilna Gaon points out that the maidservants had exactly half of the amount of kids that the primary wives had.
So Moshe ben Avraham is a descendant of Leah.
Moshe was a descendant of Leah, correct, Levi. Mashiach comes from Yehuda. But that's the offshoots of them. Yosef and Binyanim themselves are greater than the other kids. Vayivalid liYosef pasuk chav. Vayivalid liYosef beretz Mitzrayim, and it was born to Yosef in the land of Mitzrayim. Asher yolda liAsnas bas Feitifera kohen Ein, which Asnas, the daughter of Feitifera, the priest of Ein, gave birth to Menashe and Ephraim. Okay? Meaning, what does it mean, Asher yolda loy Asnas? Why does the pasuk say that Asnas gave birth to him? Okay, so it says, because she gave birth to children following in the footsteps of Yosef. Like we said before, she converted, so to speak, and accepted the traditions of Yosef, and therefore it doesn't just say that she gave birth. Asher yolda loy, that Asnas gave birth to Yosef, meaning she followed and raised the kids in his ideals. Why does it say also over here? Okay, we'll soon see. Uvnei Binyamin and the sons of Binyamin. Binyamin had 10 kids: Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Echi, Verosh, Mupim, Chupim, and Ord. These were the 10 kids of Binyamin. Before, in Rashi, Rashi brings down when Yosef met Binyamin. When Yosef met Binyamin, Binyamin appeared to Yosef. Yosef says to Binyamin, you have kids? Yeah. How many kids do you have? 10. At his own minion. So what are the names? He starts telling all the names over here. Bela, Becher, Ashbel. So Yosef said, what do these names mean? So Binyamin started telling, they're all called on my brother's name. Bela, he's a mixed amongst the nation. Becher, he was a Becher, and Argeda, and hey, he was my brother in my head. And Binyamin explained to Yosef, each kid was named based on Yosef's greatness. So the Medrash says an interesting thing. Everything that happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. Right? Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, whatever Yaakov knew, he taught Yosef. Yaakov suffered from a brother, Esav. Yosef suffered from his brothers. Yaakov was away from his parents 22 years. Yosef was away from his father for 22. Whatever happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. The question is, Yaakov had 12 kids. Why did Yosef only have 2? He should have also had 12 kids. If everything that happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef, he should have had 12 kids. So Rashi quotes before the Medrash that says Yosef was supposed to have 12 kids. What happened? When Mrs. Feitifera, Eshes Feitifar, started up with him to seduce Yosef, so he says he put his fingers in the ground and 10 drops of seed came out of his fingers, whatever that means, but it came out of his fingers. And those were the 10 drops that would have created another 10 kids. So Yosef would have had 12 kids because he had 2. He would have had but the 10 went to Binyamin. So it was still, and they were all called for the historical events that happened to Yosef. So in a certain respect, Yosef had 12 kids. He had Menashe and Ephraim, and then he had Binyamin's 10 kids, they were all called on his name. So in a certain respect, he had 12 kids. But these were Binyamin's kids. And then it says, Ela b'nei Rachel, these are the children of Rachel, asher yulad liYaakov, which were born to Yaakov. Now before, it doesn't say that. Which were born to Yaakov. Why is there emphasis here that it was born to Yaakov? Because Rachel was his favorite wife, and therefore Yosef and Binyamin were his favorite kids. Okay? Kol nefesh arba asar. Altogether, there were 14 kids. Okay? Okay. And the 14 were counting children and grandchildren, so it was altogether 14. And but it's interesting. In the 70, he's counting Yosef's kids. He's counting Yosef and his 2 kids That's three in the number 70. So we'll soon see. Okay, next, Pasuk of Gimel, Uvnei Dan Chushim. The sons of Dan was Chushim. So the commentators all ask, children is plural, and he had one kid, Chushim. So, the Ibn Ezra learns, it's possible he had a few kids, and they died. But most Mefarshim disagree with the Ibn Ezra, and they say that we find many times the Torah uses plural for singular, and singular for plural. For instance, this week's Parsha, in Oz Yashir, that we say every day in davening, we say, Sus v'reichve rama v'yam. Horse and its rider, he threw into the sea. There were a lot of horses, and there were a lot of riders. But the Torah, we find many times the Torah calls many, few, and few, many. Yaakov says in Parshat Vayishlach, Vayihili shur v'chamer. I had an ox and a donkey. He had a lot of oxen and a lot of donkeys. What did he say though? I had shur and chamer. So we find the Torah, and we quote many other places, that we find words in plural that means singular, and singular plural. So Bnei Dan was chushim.
Is a reason.
Huh?
Have to be a reason.
Well, it says that he was a very, very strong person. He was like many. He was the one that chopped off Esav's head, you know, killed Esav when Yaakov was being buried, and he didn't let, to bury him, so he chopped off his head. So Chushim. He was deaf,
yeah.
And very strong.
Don's son?
Yep. And it's very interesting.
Deaf, you said?
Yeah. As in not able to hear? I'll talk louder. For those that can't hear. But the interesting point, if you look in the Chumash, when the Jews are counted, Dan had one of the biggest tribes, number-wise. Dan, I think, had the second biggest tribe. And, like, Binyamin had 10 kids,
yeah.
Dan had one kid, but later on, when the Jews left Egypt, Dan was one of the biggest tribes, number-wise. How? Either he had a lot of wives or a lot of kids, one of the two, or both. I mean, how? Today, I'll tell you, give you a hint. Today there's 6 billion people in the world. Yeah? Started from one guy. One guy had 6 billion descendants.
Yeah, but
and that's with the flood, killing everybody in the world except Noach. Can you imagine if everybody in the world would be alive? Today we'd be overpopulated.
Binyamin was the smallest tribe before Pelegish Begiva?
No, he wasn't the smallest. No, I don't think it was the smallest. No, but then they didn't count the Jews so much. I'm talking about Chumash. Huh? Levi was the smallest because they didn't multiply 6 at a shot. But I'm saying excluding Levi, the tribes, there were bigger tribes, smaller tribes, whatever. Yosef and Menashe and Ephraim together didn't have as much as the biggest tribe, Yehuda and Dan. They didn't have as much. Okay, next. So Bnei Naphtali was Yachzeel Guni Yetzin and Shilim. Ele Bnei Bila Shinosan Lovin Rachel Bite. This is the children of Bila. Vatele Sele Yaakov Konefesh Shiva altogether 7. So it's interesting. Leah had 32, Zilpah had 16. Rachel had 14, Bila had 7. Exactly half. Kolanefesh Abol Yaakov Mitzrayim. All the people that came to Yaakov to Egypt. With Yaakov to Egypt. Yetzin Yerechi. From his descendants, Melvad Neshe B'nei Yaakov, excluding the wives of Yaakov's children, because obviously they're not mentioned here at all. So Rashi says, so some of Farshim learn, even if they married the twins, they're not counted. Or the twins died, whatever, but they're not mentioned. Kol Nefesh Shishim V'Sheish, altogether is 69. Okay? So if you add 32 plus 16 plus 11 plus 7 equals 66. Then Bnei Yosef Asher Yulad B'Mitzrayim Nefesh Shnoyim, Yosef and the two kids is 2 plus 1. So the Torah says Kol Nefesh LeBeis Yaakov Abba Mitzrayim Ashivim. So everybody, all the Jews that came out to Egypt was 70. So obviously the Torah is saying 66 plus 3 equals 70. Oh, so now the question is, who is the 70th? Because if you count the Chumash, there's only 69, and the Torah says 70. So there's one answer, an interesting Rosh, the quote over here, a Rosh, at the end of Masechtas Pesachim says, it's not 70, it's around 70. Torah rounds off numbers. But you find that in a few places in Chumash. For instance, the Torah says, when you want to get Malchus whipped, the Torah says, Arboim Yakeno, 40. But you only give the guy 39. Because it means up to the 40th. So the Rosh says, what it means over here is 70 means
just about
70. 69, then the next number would be 70.
I don't believe that for half a second.
That what?
How can a book which is so precise round up?
You find that
in... contradictory.
It's true, it's a good point. I mean, I'm saying it.
You're not saying what? Let me hear.
I'm not saying you're wrong, Rabbi. It's not out of respect, but it sounds...
You wouldn't be the first one to tell me I'm wrong anyway.
No, but the Torah is precise.
And trust me, you're not going to be the last one. You know, let me tell you something. Hello.
This dude, Rosh, Mash, whatever his name is, with all due respect, he's on something illegal.
Yeah, I know. Now, listen. Hello? Sir.
Yes, sir. I'm listening.
When the Jews are counted in the desert, yeah? When the Jews are counted in the desert,
yeah.
All the numbers seem to be 57,250. Or exact hundreds or fifties. Mm-hmm. All the numbers exactly are hundreds or fifties. If you look at the Chumash, right. It doesn't say 49, 46, 32. It's always 50 or 100. Now the question is, are you going to tell me that there was exactly 50 or 100, and there was never 51 or 53 or 25. What does it mean? You do find in Chumash, the Torah gives an approximate thing, because it's not relevant, the exact number. Do you know that the Medrash says, when the Jews left Egypt, one second, you know when the Jews left Egypt, to say 600,000, this week's Parsha, yeah, they left 600,000 Jews, yeah? The Medrash says, there wasn't 600,000. It was 599,999. That's what the Medrash says. Who was the 600,000th God? In fact, the Mefarshim say, finish with your question. One second. The question, who's 70? Who is the 70? One second. One person says, Yocheved. Another one says, Yaakov is counted. Another one says, God is counted. Okay? These are the various different opinions about right now. We do find, like I said before, that it says, later on the Chumash it says the Torah does round off numbers. When the Torah says give 40 lashes, the Torah says means only 39. Okay, now over here it's a whole different story, because the 70, and this is why the Mefarshim disagree with this opinion, says it's rounded off. Because they say, here, it can't be rounded off. Because the 70 people that descended into Egypt correspond with the 70 nations of the world. And like the Pasuk says, Hashem yisper b'chsev amim, Yasiv gvulis amim, that God sets up the boundaries of the nations, l'mispar b'nei Yisrael, to the numbers of the Jews. Okay? So therefore, the Rebbe says in the Sikha, a phenomenal concept. According to Rashi's opinion, who was the 70th? Yocheved. She was born in the walls coming into Egypt. Yeah? The number 70 was the completeness of the Jewish nation. It had to be 70 to correspond with the 70 nations of the earth. Who is number 70? A baby, a day old, that has no understanding, no emotions, no greatness at all. Mamish, a newborn baby. The newborn baby summed up and completed the number of 70. So the Rebbe says in the Sikha, you see the greatness of a Jewish baby, the greatness of a Jewish child, that even though they have no intellect, no understanding, no nothing, nevertheless, that baby completed the number 70. Yeah.
How do the 70 Jewish people correspond to 70 nations?
There's original 70 nations, right?
Jewish.
Right. But the Pasuk says in Chumash later on that God establishes the boundaries of the nations based on the Jews. Meaning, we know that when the Dor HaFlogim, right, when they built the Babylonian tower to go fight God or whatever, Hashem spread them out into 70 nations. Why 70 nations? Because they correspond with the 70 the number 70 of Jews. Meaning, everything that exists in the world, even evil, must originate in Kedusha. Because everything in the world originates from God. God is holy. Everything that exists in the world originates in Kedusha and holiness. And therefore the 70 nations of the world exist because there are 70 Jews. And the Mefarshim explained, just like each nation is different, each one of the 70 are also different. Why is the Torah emphasizing the number 70 here? Who cares? Because this shows the great miracle that happened. From 70 people, in 210 years, became 600,000 men between 20 and 60. Which means 2 to 3 million people left Egypt. The ones that left Egypt, as we read in this week's parsha, was only a fifth of the population. That means when the Jews were about to leave Egypt, four-fifths of the Jews died. Okay? Chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael, Rashi says, echad mi-chamisha. That means, if there were 2 million, let's even, 2 million Jews left Egypt, because the men, when it says 600,000 Jews, it's men between the age of 20 and 60. If you count the kids, senior citizens, and the women, you're talking over 2 million people. That was a fifth of the population, which means there were 10 million Jews in Egypt. 10 million Jews in Egypt in 210 years from the number 70. So the Torah is emphasizing the miracle that took place. By understanding that the Jews went, like we say in the Haggadah, they went down to Egypt b'mesei ma'at, with a few people, 70 people. And yet they grew in 210 years to 10 million people. It's an unbelievable miracle. The Torah is saying, when the Jews go into Galus, so the nations of the world, excluding the Jews, because the Jews are the 71st nation, the 70 nations of the world existed because of the 70 Jews that went into Golos. Each Jew having their own uniqueness to them. It also says in Kabbalah, and Alter Rebbe brings it down in Tanya, Shivim Panim LaTeira, the 70 ways of learning Teira. Every aspect in Teira could be learned 70 ways. In Kabbalah it says each way has 600,000 ways of learning Teira, because there's 600,000 general souls. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains, how many souls are there? No, not in each person. How many souls collectively did God make? 600,000, we got 14 million, 15 million Jews today. So the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, there were 600,000 souls, you're right, 600,000 souls, but each one is composed of 600,000, and each one of those is a spark which is a neshama. That's what Al-Tareb says in Tanya. So there's 600,000 times 600,000, which means 36 with 10 zeros. 10 zeros.
3 billion.
I think it's 360 billion. Yeah. Huh? 360 billion. Or maybe it's 36 billion. When I take away a zero or two, it doesn't matter. At that stage of the game, it doesn't matter. But it's 36 plus 5 zeros plus 5 zeros. It's 10 zeros, no?
10, yeah.
So it's 10 zeros plus 36.
360 million.
No, not million. It can't be million.
3 billion.
There's 9 zeros after 10.
Million is 6.
36 plus 10 zeros.
1,000 million is 1 billion. So that's 3 billion.
360 billion.
360 billion souls. Now, that's how many souls there are. How many general souls are there? 600,000. If you want to make it more detailed, it's 70. Because the Jews going into Egypt were 70.
How much population of the whole world?
When?
Now.
6 billion.
6 billion?
Yeah.
Only?
Only? China itself has over a billion. What do you mean?
It tells 360 billion.
Yeah, Nishamas, all together. Right.
So we were all parts of
Nishamas. Well, parts and Nishamas keep coming down. And mm-hmm. Trust me, it's going to take a long time to finish all those souls. No, it doesn't mean necessarily that, obviously. Because it's impossible to 360 billion.
Everybody come 100 times.
Now, one more interesting point over here. When the Torah says about the kids that came down, the people that came down, it says, Shivim Nefesh, singular. Mm-hmm. By Esav, it says in the Torah, 16 nefoshes. But here, 70, it says nefesh, singular. Because all Jews were one. All the Jews were united, were like one person. By Esav, there were only 16, but each one was incompatible to everybody else. They were different people, they didn't want to have anything to do with anybody else, and so on. He says, according to Medrash HaGadol, when the Eden left Mitzrayim, they numbered 599,999. And God made up to 600,000. Okay, let's start the next pasuk. Yehuda.
Wasn't it 600,000 men?
Yeah.
Plus women and children.
Please, between 20 and 60 men. That's what he said, there were 2 million Jews that left Egypt.
Only 600,000 neshamas.
2 million or 3 million?
No. There's 600,000 general neshamas. Corresponding with the number of 600,000 that left Egypt. Is that a question? Male neshamas, female neshamas. Some men have female neshamas, some women have male neshamas. I mean, people are all mixed up.
Is it 2 million or 3 million? I read in some place 3 million.
It depends on you. Nobody knows exactly. Yeah. You just calculate 600,000 men between 20 and 60, so you can figure out how many women.
At least
younger kids and older people and whatever. 2 million, 3 million, nobody knows exactly. According to one opinion in the Medrash, Chamusha means 1 in 50 went out, not 1 in 5. Yeah. There's opinion in the Medrash is a fiftieth of the Jews went out. That means if 2 million Jews went out, there were 100 million Jews in Egypt.
How could they make so many children in 200 years?
Six
persons
at the Shad. No, but the Seder, the accepted one is 1/5.
Six people at the Shad, even if you count it, how do you get that many people?
Why?
She can only have six children
at a Shad. At a time, right? And she had twins?
60.
She had 12. She had triplets, she had 18.
Some opinion said 60.
Okay. They had living maids.
But they have to be big enough for whole Egypt to be scared of them.
Yeah, but they were still, Egypt was so powerful. They were, you understand, even though the Jews numbered 2 million, yeah? I mean, let's say conservative amounts, 2 million people that were living in Egypt. Egypt was such a fortified country and so strong that even a single slave was never able to escape. I feel Eved Echad, even one slave, the Medrash says, couldn't escape Egypt. That's how powerful Egypt was. It was the superpower of the world. And it wasn't a democracy, it was a dictatorship. What?
How did Moshe Rabbeinu escape when he killed the Egyptian?
He was an enslaved.
He wasn't at that time, he was still a prince.
And what, the lions didn't shout on him?
No, obviously not. He was a lion tamer. Okay. They had lions and cry. They had a whole thing of people impossible to escape. Okay, Shishi. Vesyuda Shalach Lefanov, El Yasef. Yehuda, Yaakov sent ahead to Yasef. Leherdis Lefanov, to make this yeshiva, to prepare ahead of him, Geshna, to the city of Geshna. Veyaveh Arta Geshna, he came to the land of Geshna. So it says, before Yaakov came down, this is a remarkable concept. Before Yaakov came down to Egypt, he sent Yehuda to open a yeshiva. Yaakov said, I refuse to go to Egypt if there's no environment conducive to Torah. No Torah, he's not going down. So he sent Yehuda to open a yeshiva. Why did he send Yehuda? The simple meaning is because he was the biggest chevreman. You know, he got things done. He got he brought Binyamin back. I mean, he did things had to get done. Yehuda was the, so to speak, the leader of the brothers. He was the king of the brothers. But the Rebbe asks in the Sikh a very simple question. Yosef was already in Egypt. Yosef was the king. He had all the money for fundraising.
Right.
He sends Yehuda, who doesn't know the language, to open a yeshiva in Mitzrayim. I mean, I'm sure they have to buy a building, fundraising, make a dinner, I mean, whatever it was. Yosef, ready-made guy. He had all the money in the kingdom. He could have opened the yeshiva right away. Why didn't Yaakov email to Yosef and say, do me a favor, go open a yeshiva, that when I come down, you should have, you know, ready to learn. So the Rebbe explains, it's a very interesting concept. If you want to have a yeshiva, you have to be dedicated completely to learning. Yosef had a big company to run. He had to run a country. Okay, as great Yosef was a very big tzaddik, but Yosef couldn't dedicate his life to learning. Just like we find Menashe and Ephraim. Later on, why did Yaakov favor Ephraim over Menashe? Because Ephraim was always with Yaakov learning. And Menashe, being the older son, was more involved in the government.
Yeah,
he was helping Yosef. He was the interpreter. He was, like we saw before, he was always involved in running the government. So Yaakov said, if I want a yeshiva, yes, Yosef has the funding, and Yosef has the ability to do it, but that's not the yeshiva I want. I want a yeshiva which is going to be dedicated completely to learning Torah. And that's similar to the concept that Rebbe explained, one of the reasons why Torah was given on Shabbos. The Gemara says, when did God give the Torah to the Jews? What day of the week was it? It was Shabbos. Why did God give the Torah on Shabbos? To teach a Jew that when you want to learn Torah, you have to be like Shabbos. What do you mean like Shabbos? When Shabbos comes and the phone rings, telemarketing's on the line. You don't bother answering the phone. You know, Shabbos, there's no phone on Shabbos. There's just no phone on Shabbos. Somebody wants to do business, and Shabbos there is no business. When a person learns Torah, the Chazal teach us, you have to be like Shabbos. You're in the middle of learning, there's a telephone, there's no telephone. Now I'm Shabbos. It could be Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Monday day. Now the person's in Shabbos. Now he's learning Torah. When you learn Torah, you're Shabbos, so there's no phone, there's no business, there's no nothing. Coffee maybe, because you can make coffee in Shabbos too. But not business, not telephones. So that's why Yaakov wanted to send Yehuda, because Yehuda was dedicated to learning Torah, not the case of that had involvement in government. Okay? Just one last thing, it's late. But Geishna, we said before, Gimel Shin Nun Hei is the letters of the dreidel. Nun Gimel Hei Shin is Geishna. And Geishna Gimel Shin Nun Hei equals 348, which is Mashiach. Mashiach and Nun Gimel Hei Shin and the dreidel and Geishna are all the same numerical value. And in Mitzvah next week we'll discuss the connection between Geishna to the concept of Mashiach.